Hey there. So this episode is slightly different. It is a rebroadcast of an interview I did for the podcast Leaving Academia, Becoming a Freelance Editor with Paulina Cossette. I wanted to share this because it provides some inside information about why I became a sabbatical coach and how I started my business. If you're curious about working with me, this episode will give you a behind-the-scenes glimpse at what I do and why I do it, and my rationale for approaching sabbatical planning the way that I do. This episode also might be interesting to you if you're thinking about starting your own academia-adjacent side business. So you'll learn how I started my business, including how I defined my niche and identified the problem I solved for clients, how I found my first clients, when and how I created my website, and how I've continued to run my business and attract clients, over 30 as of this broadcast, while also balancing this with my academic job and my life as a mom, all without getting burned out. As we head into the holidays and the winter break, I hope you might have a moment to take a listen and hear a little bit more about my journey as a sabbatical coach.
How do you start an academic coaching business while you're still in academia? On this episode of Leaving Academia, Becoming a Freelance Editor, my guest, Bethany Walensky, PhD, explains how she started her business, Sabbatical Coaching for Academics. We discuss how a spark of an idea during her sabbatical led to a fully booked coaching business, what Bethany did to define her niche and identify the problem she solves for clients, when and why you should create a website, and how Bethany has continued to attract clients while balancing her business with her academic job and life as a mom without getting burned out. Don't miss Bethany's helpful advice for scholars who are considering becoming an academic coach, especially her suggestion for when you should start the business. Little hint here, it's not what you'd expect. And if you're curious about what life as an editor or coach can do for you, discover how you can make this dream a reality by going to acadiaediting.com/become an editor. Now, here's my conversation with Bethany. Welcome to Leaving Academia, Becoming a Freelance Editor, the podcast. I'm your host, Paulina Cossette. In 2019, I was a political science professor who was fed up with the stress and hostility of academia, not to mention the low pay. I left my tenure-track job and went from barely surviving to thriving as a freelance academic editor. Today, I own Acadia Editing Services, an editing and coaching business that brings in six figures a year. In this podcast, I'll discuss the challenges of academia, what academic editing involves, and what life as a freelancer looks like. If you're willing to jump outside your comfort zone, it is possible to find joy, true flexibility, and a profitable and rewarding career as an academic editor. Thanks for listening. Hi, Bethany. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Paulina. Thanks so much for having me on.
So we have a very special episode today. Normally, I talk with people who have left academia and become editors, but you are not an editor. You are a sabbatical coach to faculty. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your academic background, what you do as a professor, and then we can get into your business and how you started it.
Sure. Yeah. So I am an associate professor in the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University, and I study early childhood policy, and I do that work in the U.S. and in Tanzania. And I came into sabbatical coaching actually during my own sabbatical. I had this really transformative sabbatical. And I think as I reflected on the process that I took to get there, I realized that I had a journey that took me in a different direction. There were kind of these inflection points when I shifted gears or I thought about new possibilities, and that really helped me have a sabbatical that helped me overcome my burnout and really get excited about coming back to work at the end of sabbatical.
I think you just said the magic words, overcoming burnout. I guess, you know, when I was in academia, I didn't get to the point that I had a sabbatical, but I did have a maternity leave, and I even thought, before I had my son, I thought I'd be able to catch up on research on maternity leave, which is sort of a joke now. But I've always thought of sabbatical as like the time that you do as much research as possible. So what do you see as like the goal of, or maybe push back on that for me, you know, like how does a person do research on sabbatical and overcome burnout?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if I hadn't taken the sabbatical that I had, I probably would have ended up leaving academia because after I got tenure, I was just exhausted, you know, young kids, pandemic, we had a lot of loss in our family. I was still grieving a lot and it just, everything felt so overwhelming. And so I am going to push back against this idea of a sabbatical being a time to get all the things done because I actually think that there are lots of different ways to take a sabbatical. There are lots of different purposes for a sabbatical. And the most important thing or the key to having the sabbatical that's right for you is really identifying the purpose of your sabbatical first and then planning it from there. So I think that, you know, your institution, what they want from your sabbatical is for you to be more productive, right? It's kind of this neoliberal university. We always need to produce more and more. And I think that takes us away from kind of the origins of a sabbatical, which were really about rest, right? And as academics, we're doing intellectual work and that requires us to have energy and space to think about new ideas and, you know, take our work in new directions. So for me, the turning point in my sabbatical journey came, I mean, this was when I was planning it, came when I stepped away from the plan that was what I should do, which was like starting a big new project and, you know, doing a million things that would have kept me in that overwhelm and burnout mode. And I decided to think about what I personally needed from my sabbatical. And I realized what I needed from my sabbatical was rest and recovery. And so when I prioritized that, that led to a different kind of sabbatical than the one I had originally imagined where I was kind of the good scholar, you know, getting the Fulbright and doing the next logical thing in my career, which would have been great in a lot of ways, but I don't think it would have allowed me to come back after sabbatical with energy and enthusiasm for my job.
That's a great way to look at it, that by taking time for yourself and prioritizing yourself, you're actually increasing your productivity in the long term and certainly increasing the longevity of your academic career because you took care of yourself and you come back better than when you left.
Yeah. And so I had the privilege of taking a year-long sabbatical, which I know can be really challenging because of, you know, most of the time you can take a semester-long sabbatical at full pay and a year-long sabbatical at half pay or some reduction in pay. But because I had the year, and I'm almost like embarrassed to admit this, but I want to say it anyway, I did not work for the first 4 or 5 months. Literally did not work. And that was what I needed. And I worried when I, you know, I think we worry that if we take our foot off the gas, we won't be able to find it again, or we're going to lose momentum and not be able to pick it up again. And I tell my clients all the time, and I talk about this on my podcast, like, if you're someone who has earned a sabbatical, you are probably extremely motivated, highly productive, very smart and successful. And so you shouldn't be worried about taking a break because you don't think you'll be able to get back into it again. What that break allowed me to do was to feel like I wanted to do my work again. You know, when I started my sabbatical, I was just like, I remember I got to revise and resubmit for something. And I was like, nope, I don't like the comments. I'm pulling that, right? I was in like burn it all down mode. And so resting, taking care of myself, exploring my identity beyond being an academic allowed me to then come back. And I think I was able to accomplish the same amount of scholarly work in that second half of my sabbatical as I probably would have done anyway, except I enjoyed it more, if that makes sense. I wasn't slogging through it you know, every day.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I often preach this idea of doing what you want to do as opposed to what you should do, especially when you're running a business. I think that's one of the greatest things about having your own business is that there's no more, oh, I should be doing this. So it's great to hear that you found a way to incorporate that while still, you know, being a scholar. So while you were on sabbatical, at what point did this idea of starting your own business come about?
I think I remember, like, even in the first month. So we spent the first half of sabbatical in Bordeaux, France, which was part of the reason I didn't work and part of the reason it was so magical. And something I want to say about that is I actually had no good reason to be in Bordeaux except that I wanted to live there. And so this is another thing that I think academics assume when it comes to sabbatical, that if you're going to go away, you have to go somewhere that is somehow connected to your scholarly work. And I didn't connect with anyone at universities there. I was just living my best life, you know, like making friends, training for a half marathon. And so we lived in Bordeaux because it was something that made sense for our family. So we got there in mid-August, and I think probably in September, by the time the kids were off to school, I remember saying to my husband, like, I don't know, I wonder if I could like help people plan their sabbaticals, you know, because I was in that glow, that honeymoon phase, which quite frankly lasted the whole semester we were in Bordeaux. I never got tired of being there. And so that was kind of the first inkling of an idea. And then I remember, and I didn't do anything. And then like a couple months later, I remember I had this journal and I was writing down like, you know, kind of like what would a curriculum look like if I were going to help someone plan their sabbatical? I am trained as a teacher and I have lots of years of experience teaching. So I feel like I'm really good at putting together a syllabus. So I kind of started imagining what would the syllabus for this course look like? And then in the spring, so then we came back to Michigan in around Christmas time. And in the spring, I started thinking like, I think I really want to do this. Like, I want to share what I've learned with other people and I want to support people in this like happy time. And part of what was driving that is when I was planning my sabbatical, I reached out to a lot of colleagues and friends to hear about their sabbaticals. And everyone had these cautionary tales. And I was like, what if we can figure out how to not have people have the type of sabbatical where it ends in regret, you know, or it ends in like, well, I did this, but I should have done this. So make sure you do this. So that was kind of like when I convinced myself that I think this might be a thing that's worth doing. And then do you want me to keep going and tell you about like how I actually started the business?
Yeah, it sounds like that, you know, you went through this sort of semester long thought process of crafting your niche. And that's, you know, that's what I teach in my course for people who want to go into coaching is think about first, who do you want to work with? Is it grad students or faculty? For you, it's obviously people who've just gotten tenure going on sabbatical, maybe even planning another research trip or something. And then think of what problem do you solve? And so you nailed down this problem that people have that's they don't know how to plan a sabbatical. And so they end up making a bunch of mistakes and then having regrets. And so how do we fix that, right? So that they get the most that they can. So now that you went at that point, when you've carved out your niche, what was the next step with starting the business?
Yeah. So then I decided, well, I think I need a website, right? I guess as one might think. In hindsight, I'm not sure that that's where I would have started, but happily I did start there. And like you, I've kind of taken a deep dive into podcasts. So I was listening to the Coach Pony podcast, and she had a guest on there that was talking about that they build websites specifically for coaches. And so I contacted them about having a website built, and they did a great job. The company is called Swift Sites, SWYFT. And when I had the call with Jason, who's the owner of the business, he said, oh, well, what kind of coaching do you do? I said, I do sabbatical coaching for academics. And he was like, I have talked to like thousands of coaches, and I've never heard anyone say that they're a sabbatical coach. And later I had someone tell me, like, you kind of have a niche within a niche, right? Like, I am so narrow. Like, this is a very, you know, how many sabbaticals do academics even get? A couple, maybe. And then I'm only working with academics. So anyway, Jason from Swift Sites got really excited. And he said, you know, I'm actually running, like, piloting a boot camp to help people get their businesses started. Do you want to be part of it? And so then that was kind of like that. I did that. And that propelled me into starting my business faster and probably better than I ever could have expected, because I didn't know anything about running a business or how to sell things, right? Like, I'm very good at making the curriculum, but I think the, you know, doing it on my own, I would have created my website and then kind of said, okay, find me. But the reality of it is most people are not looking for a sabbatical coach, because until May 2024, a sabbatical coach didn't even exist. So working in that boot camp really helped me. Again, like, I think I pretty much had my niche already, but helped me figure out the structure of what I was offering and then how to start attracting clients.
So you describe it as a boot camp. Was it like an online course and coaching together, or what did that look like?
Yeah, so there were video modules. It was, and then we would meet once a week. But there was a lot of also back and forth. So you'd have an assignment linked to each module, and it was kind of go at your own pace. So I was like, I was really quick. I was just like really excited about it. So I just kept like sending my stuff in, and then we would go back and forth, you know, online, and then have these. And then there was also, you know, you could at any time have like a 20-minute conversation with Jason, who was the coach. So that was really helpful. But he sent just like really personalized feedback along every step of the way. And so you kind of do all the legwork to create your signature framework. And I didn't even have my website, by the way, was not even built. So I did the boot camp and then had the website built. And that was really, like, I think that was the right way to do it, because by the time I made the website, I already knew what I was offering. If I had built the website first, I wouldn't have known my offer or, you know, how to kind of pitch it to my ideal client. So yeah, so we worked together, and like I said, it was really quick and intensive. And 3 weeks in, I had my first paying client. So that was his philosophy was really kind of build the framework, but don't kind of build out everything. Get a paying client. And then as you're going through the program with that first client, you're building things as you go along. Kind of like if you're prepping for class, you know, like I'm teaching, I don't have all of my lectures prepped all in advance. I'm doing it on a week by week basis along with my class.
That's so great to hear that, because I am very guilty of being a DIYer where, you know, I'm like super overly self-sufficient. I don't need to take a course on this. I'm just going to listen to 72 hours of podcasts and figure it out on my own, which is helpful. But you think about, like, you know, and for me, it comes from like a fear of spending money and needing to be frugal, because I grew up needing to be frugal. And I've learned, though, since I have become more successful, that if you spend a little bit of money, you make progress so much faster. It is so much easier to have somebody show you, do X, Y, Z, and you get this result. You know, you have, if somebody has a proven method that works for them and for other people, you just follow their steps and you put it all together. And like you said, you had your first client in 3 weeks, which is amazing. And you probably made the money back on the course in no time at all. And so it's a little bit of an upfront investment, but it can pay dividends later on. So that's great to hear. So how did you go on from there? You have this client. How much longer was the program?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I don't actually know, because then I feel like once I started having clients, you know, things were kind of cruising. I was relying less on the program and more just kind of doing the work with clients. But I think, so the strategy that we used to get clients, I thought was really interesting. So what I did is I did research calls with, basically I thought of anyone I knew who might have insight into taking or planning a sabbatical. So I have this list, like a Google Doc with, I don't know, 40 or 50 academic colleagues who I thought of, and I emailed them all and I said, hey, I'm starting this business where I help academics plan their life-changing sabbatical. And I know, and then I would tailor it a little bit. I had one version that was like, you know, I know you've taken sabbaticals in the past. Would you be willing to hop on Zoom with me for 30 minutes and tell me about your experience? And then with folks who I thought might be planning a sabbatical, but I didn't know, I'd say, like, could I talk to you about what it's been like to plan your sabbatical and hear about, you know, any challenges you're facing? So this did two things. It helped me learn, like, it was basically market research. And so I learned so much that helped me, again, like, shape the contours of my course. Like, one of the things that I initially had in my course was like supporting people in writing their sabbatical application. And then as I was having these conversations, I was thinking, you know, that is such a, it really is so institution and department dependent that I don't think that's really a service. Like, that could be a service in and of itself, just like helping people write their sabbatical applications, but I didn't, or like find funding. I just realized like those didn't need to be key elements of my program. So those calls really helped. And it was also fun because these were people that I was friends with or, you know, knew from conferences or whatever. And everyone likes to talk about their experience. So I got to learn a lot more about my colleagues and about kind of like gain this deeper understanding of sabbaticals across different institutions and disciplines. And so then what I would do is if I had someone in one of these research calls that was planning a sabbatical or had a sabbatical coming up, I would say, hey, actually, like, I'm looking for charter clients to be part of my program. Would you be interested in hearing more? And so I think my first five or six clients, I mean, I think within a couple weeks of officially launching and having those calls, like within 2 weeks, I had five or six clients who were all people that I knew, not all from my, you know, from my university or department, but just people who I had these research calls with. So that really kind of got things started for me.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about market research is so important because we can think that, you know, we had this problem that was really hard for us to work through. And maybe a lot of people have the same problem, but they talk about it in a different way, right? Or they emphasize, like you were saying, the application was not really a good fit for the program. Maybe it would need to be presented as a different kind of offer. And so the only way you're going to learn about that is from actually talking to people. And I think a lot of business owners are so eager to get clients starting right off the bat that they skip that step. But there's so much that you can learn that will pay off not only in your copywriting and your marketing, but also, you know, you were able to connect with clients just by listening to them and then, you know, asking them if they'd like to find out more about your program.
Yeah. And I think it helped me understand kind of the range of experiences. So not everyone, you know, I think I do attract clients like me who are just totally burned out and overwhelmed, but I also have people who will say, I'm actually not burned out. I just need to figure out how do I make the most of this time? Like, that's really been weighing on me. So there is this kind of modulating effect, right? Of yes, I want to have a niche, but I don't want to turn away clients who aren't burned out. Like, oh, I can't help you because you're not burned out. So learning more about different people's experiences, I think has helped me support them better, right? Because I'm understanding the range of places people are coming to my program from, and then I can tailor our conversations to support their needs.
So tell us more about your program and how did you launch it? What does it look like? And how do you think most people are finding you today?
Yeah, so I'll start with how are people finding me? I actually think through Facebook, which I know people are thinking about leaving Facebook. And I was not a Facebook user before this. But I think there's something when you listen to those podcasts about business, people will talk about you know, meeting your clients where they're at. And there are some really active Academic Moms Facebook groups. And so I think the first sort of swath of clients who I didn't know came to me because I have a very good friend who's very supportive of me. And when people would ask questions about sabbaticals in those Facebook groups, she would say, "Hey, my friend Bethany is doing this. You should get in touch with her." And so she would send me, like, I would get a text from her with a screenshot of the question someone asked and her response. And I remember this, like the first time this happened, it was like, you know, 9:30 PM. And by the time I woke up the next morning, I had like 5 discovery calls booked with me. I was just like, oh my goodness, how is this? Like, this is actually happening. This is a thing. So it was, that was really exciting. And so that's a lot. It's just, you know, people like you who I'm connected to, other like fellow academic mom business owners who will comment on Facebook posts. I have some clients who have written posts in different Academic Moms Facebook groups just about their experience with me, and that's led to an uptick in interest. So I think that's how people are finding me. I've had a couple people find me on Reddit because I've responded to some things, and I think Reddit must be high in the Google algorithm. But again, I don't think most people are searching for a sabbatical coach, so I'm really relying on word of mouth and recommendations from people who know about me or have worked with me.
Yeah, I want to highlight that because I think a lot of academics who are thinking of either starting a side hustle or leaving academia and going into business, I think they feel a lot of shame about doing that, you know, or there's what are people going to think of me if they find out I have a business or something? It feels like academia is understandably and rightfully anti-capitalist, but it shouldn't extend to people like us who are starting businesses, you know, because we enjoy it or we like the extra money or whatever our reasoning is. And so I want to highlight that you've had so many other fellow academics be supportive of this and that people should not be afraid of, you know, what people are going to think. Because if somebody doesn't like you because you've started a business that makes you happy, then the problem is them, not you.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit, it felt very vulnerable to kind of tell people what I was doing. And I think in part because I worried that people would say, what does Bethany know about sabbaticals? Like, what gives her the credibility to do this? I think sometimes it's a little jealousy, right? Like some people might think, oh, wow, that's like a big risk. And I wish that I could do that, right? So I just try to remember that. I mean, now that I've worked with a number of clients, like I have, you know, 2 clients who have done the program and have completed their sabbatical. I have 6 clients who are currently on sabbatical, and then like 7 or 8 more that I'm working with are coming up. And so I have so many examples of the impact that I'm making with people. And so I just remind myself of that. And I also remind myself that sometimes the people who might accept it the least are the people kind of closest to you in your department or institution, right? And so that's where I find it very, and I do have many colleagues who are very supportive of it, but I do think there's, in some ways, it's easier to work with people who are outside of your institution who don't know you in your academic capacity already.
Yeah. And there's a quote from Amy Porterfield, who's the big online course guru, who says the people who leave nasty comments on your YouTube videos or whatever are not running their own businesses. You know, like the people who give negative feedback are not doing it, because if you are running your own business and you are succeeding, you don't have time to go around leaving nasty comments or something. So,
yeah.
So what exactly does your program look like when you have a discovery call and somebody enrolls? What happens then?
Yeah, great. Yep. So I always do discovery calls because I want to make sure that it's a good fit. So you kind of can't sign up for the program just by clicking a button on my website. I want to make sure that, you know, that we're a good match and that, quite frankly, that we like each other, right? Because my program involves a number of one-on-one sessions. So a big part of it is building that personal relationship. So what I offer is a comprehensive program that walks you through the process of planning your sabbatical, provides support while you're on sabbatical, and then also provides a roadmap for re-entry after sabbatical, which can be a challenging transition that I think people don't really talk about. Most of the work happens pre-sabbatical. So I have, you know, a course platform that I use, and each week there are 7 modules. So each week there is sort of a short video lesson and then some activities to complete. And then we do a one-on-one coaching session. So for that kind of first part of planning the sabbatical, there are 7 modules and there are 6 one-on-one sessions. Then when folks are on their sabbatical, I check in with them 3 times with prompts for reflection and course correction. Because I think, again, it's, you know, you can have this amazing, beautiful plan, and then life inevitably happens. The kids get sick, a family member gets sick, you don't get the grant you thought you would get, you know, so many things. And so as important as it is to have a plan, we also have to be able to pivot, right? And I really encourage my clients to reflect as they go along so that if you need to pivot, you do it before, you know, you don't get to the end of your sabbatical and you're like, oh man, that didn't go as I thought it would. And I wish I had done this. So I check in consistently. And then while they're on sabbatical, my clients can have access to me for 1 one-on-one coaching session. And then towards the end of sabbatical, I have a re-entry playbook that I share with my clients. And we can also have another one-on-one session, either right before they come back or during their first semester back, to help them navigate re-entry. Because what we really want to avoid is kind of, you know, you have this amazing sabbatical and then you go back to work and you hop right back on the hamster wheel and, you know, get back into the cycle of burnout and overwhelm. So we talk a lot, even in the planning process, about what are the things you want to put in place during your sabbatical, new habits, sort of like self-care, wellness, the ways you relate to people in your life, boundaries that you set. How can you put those in place during your sabbatical? And then most importantly, how do you carry those forward into your, you know, your post-sabbatical life?
That's amazing. What a comprehensive and holistic approach. You know, like, you're not just helping people get a visa and figure out where to live or how to plan their research. You're really helping them reevaluate their approach to scholarship and academia and their lives, and you're there for them the whole way. So that is an amazing, amazing support that you're giving to them.
Yeah. And you know, what's so interesting is when I started my business, so the one thing I told my husband, I wanted to do this, and he's like, so I have like permanent wanderlust. I always want to travel. And my husband was like, the only thing is you're going to want to go on everyone's sabbaticals. Like, how are you going to manage that? What has been so interesting to me is actually most of the clients I've worked with so far are doing their sabbatical at home. And so it has not been about visas and logistics. And I do have I have an add-on program that I help people navigate that, because that's obviously, like, people are taking sabbaticals away and trying to figure that out. But no, it's, so really what we're doing is figuring out, like, your purpose, your priorities, and how, and like you said, looking holistically. So I'm not here to make you help you have a more productive sabbatical. I mean, we can do that if you want to, but we're not going to dive right into, okay, here are my goals and how do I get them done? I make people take a step back from their goals and their to-do list to say, like, what is the purpose of my sabbatical? How am I feeling now? How do I want to feel at the end? And then we create a roadmap to help you, to help people get there.
That's so great. I love that. So you're taking each person and hearing from them what they want to accomplish and what they need. Maybe you even hear things talking to them that they don't know, right? That they don't realize they're burned out or whatever. And you're able to say, you know, let's step back and look at the whole picture and do what, not only what you want to accomplish, but what's really going to be good for you and support you. So what would you say to academics who are thinking about either starting a side hustle or a business? What's a couple of pieces of advice that you might give to them about juggling a business in academia, or just, you know, somebody who's scared to take the leap and start a business?
Yeah. I mean, I would say get some support. Like we have, you know, we have this Facebook group that we started with academic women in business. I think finding some people who have done it, who can help you, which I guess I'm saying this, but I didn't actually do it. I was kind of like on my own, just doing it. But I think, you know, getting some of that reinforcement and cheerleading that you can do this and kind of asking questions of people who have done it. The other thing I would say is like kind of starting before you're ready. And I think sometimes we think about the process of starting a business backward. Like I was saying, you know, you think, oh, I need a website in order to start. I do think a website is important. And I quickly had to have one because I think that gave me more credibility. But you can start testing your ideas before you have a website. And I think if you're an academic and you want to start a business that is somehow adjacent to academia, the great news is you already know a lot of potential clients. You just have to get over the fear of reaching out to people and telling them what you're doing. But I think that's, for me, it's been great. I'm not kind of like out there in the world randomly looking for people. I'm working within the network that I already have. And then I would say like being really clear on, you know, a business is going to attract clients in, you know, this kind of a, like a coaching business or something. Like, what is the problem that you're solving? I think that's, people tend to think that, oh, if I do everything for everyone, I'm going to get lots and lots of clients. And like I said, I'm like a niche within a niche, and people are like, I'm full for the spring. I can't take anyone else on because I have a full-time job. So don't be afraid to be really specific and really clear on what the problem is that you're solving, but also do that market research to see if people are actually wanting what you're offering, and use the market research to refine your offers. Like my course has changed. I started my business in May of last year, and I've already done kind of a second iteration based on that first round of clients who went through the program. I tweaked it and I, you know, shifted things a little bit because I got really good feedback from them. And then balancing it, I mean, I think that's a little bit more challenging. So it's just kind of a, you know, this is like, I think for me, I've said, well, you know, especially when I was getting started, like we had a vacation planned already in July, and I was doing, and I didn't know I was going to start this business in May. And so we were in France and I was doing calls with clients like after my kids went to bed. And that is not like my ideal, but also I told myself, and I had a conversation with my husband, I said, like, I'm going to need to like really bust it a little bit here to like push myself to like get this off the ground. It's not always going to be this way, right? And now I have better boundaries. But I think knowing that there are going to be some sort of more intensive times when it might be harder to juggle with your personal and your professional life. But then also there are, like, for me, it's very cyclical. Like everyone in January was on my call list wanting to talk about sabbaticals. And now there's a lull. Like I don't have a lot of discovery calls. So I'm just doing work with clients. I think the last thing I'll say about that is the way that I've set up my program, because I have this course that people follow and they have modules. It was really busiest when I was setting it up for my first client, like when I was building it all. Now I have all the materials in place. And so it's really just the, you know, the one-on-one calls. That's kind of the work that I'm doing now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was definitely busiest when I was first writing and recording all my videos and modules and stuff. But it's like, you know, that's like new course prep, right? The first time you teach a course, it's the hardest. And then when you've taught it 35 times, you know, you could teach it in your sleep. And maybe you make some tweaks here and there each semester, but it does get a lot easier because I think a lot of people have the same questions, the same challenges. But I love what you said about start before you're ready. Because I think that's so true. So many people in business face this, that they're waiting to announce their business until they're ready, until they have the website, until they have whatever. You're never going to be ready. I mean, business is a constant evolution. You know, everything's constantly changing. And so you just have to put yourself out there, just take the leap, and then you'll figure it out as you go along because you can do it. You know, if people, I always tell people, if you could write a dissertation and, you know, survive academia than you could do anything. So
yeah, and I think the benefit we have as academics is we're tend to be pretty curious and have a learning orientation. So I also see things like if I have a discovery call with someone and they don't end up joining, you know, enrolling in my program, I don't see that as a loss. I learned something about their experience, or I learned about why they weren't a good fit. So I think if you kind of have this, you know, can take the pressure off yourself, don't make it so high stakes, and just say like, I'm learning a lot through this process. And it's like, I'm building new skills and muscles, right? It's not just doing the things I'm doing now are just so different from what I do in my everyday academic life. But that's part of why I love it. It lets me be creative in different ways and get to know a lot of people, which is really exciting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to run a business, I think. So yeah. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, so check out my website. It's www.bethanywilinski.com. And hopefully we can put a link in the show notes because that might be hard for people to find.
Absolutely,
And then you can also find me on Facebook, Sabbatical Coaching for Academics, and then on LinkedIn, just under my personal profile.
Great.
And I love to talk about sabbaticals. So just like, you know, we just recorded a podcast with you about your academic editing business, and you said you're happy to talk to anyone who's thinking about leaving academia. I just love talking about sabbaticals. So even if you don't think you want to join my program, but you just want to talk about sabbaticals, please get in touch. I'd love to chat.
That's great. Thanks so much, Bethany.
Thanks, Paulina.
If you're unhappy in academia and you think you might be a good editor or writing coach, check out my course, Becoming an Academic Editor. This digital course is paired with a 12-week group coaching program to support you through your decision to leave academia or not, and to start building a profitable and rewarding academic editing business. Learn more by going to acadiaediting.com/becomeaneditor. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.